So we were talking yesterday about nothing, or emptiness, or what that concept really means, especially in relation to the videos we've been watching about sight and sound, where you could see that what you think you see out there is actually seeing your own mind. Is that right? Do you remember that?
Could you repeat that again, please?
And the whole understanding that it isn't that something isn't out there, it's that how you're seeing it is not necessarily the same thing as what's out there. And that a name or a word should actually be considered to be a verb rather than a noun, because it's in a process of dissolving. Whatever you're looking at is in a process of change, transformation. From whatever it is I see at the moment, in the next moment it's different. And so is the seer. Is that true? But we tend to reify our world, don't we? We tend to think that I really see something, or I really like this, or I really don't like that. Don't we? We have a very strong sense of an I. And as soon as we have a strong sense of an I, there's going to be a strong sense of objects. Because the object defines the I, and the I defines the object. They're very tied, aren't they? And isn't it true that when you start to meditate, one of the most shocking things is watching beneath the surface? Watching your mind when you're, say, you're watching your breathing. Wink, wink. But you're not actually watching your breathing, because you watch, oh yeah, in-breath, oh yeah, out-breath, oh yeah, this is pretty easy, I should be able to... Probably this is, I wonder why we're doing this. It doesn't, oh, wait a minute. In breath. Out breath. Yeah, all right, now I got it now. I'm doing it right. Gee, I have to tell my Aunt Miss Isabella about this. Oh, wait a minute. In breath. Out breath. And you begin to see how fickle your awareness is. Don't you? And you don't think you have such a fickle mind until you start to sit. And some people get very frustrated by that. They think it should be different. They don't find it interesting. And it might even take them like 2 or 3 years before they find it damn interesting why they can't just keep their mind focused. Because it is interesting. Whose mind is it? Well, that's a good question. It is interesting. And also then you run into the I am better than, I'm worse than, I'm equal, our most favorite game to play in the world, isn't it? I am better, oh, I should be able to do this. Oh, I'm worse than, oh, I can't do it as well as they are. I'm just as good as everybody else at doing this. But the criticism from, you know, having never actually been able to count 21 breaths, the criticism of not being able to count 3 breaths, you know, your first 5 days of meditation. Like, where does that criticism come from? You've never tried it before. You know? How come you're such an expert? How come there's this resident expert that tells you exactly whether you're good at something or bad at something before you even give yourself a decent chance to explore it? It's very curious. Mm. It's really curious how often we are our own worst enemy. Don't you think that's true? So often we are our own worst enemy? Or how upset we get because something doesn't go the way we want it to? Which we? Which self? How many selves can you be in 1 second? Quite a few, I would think. Mm-hmm. Isn't that true? So when we're watching the whole science of the senses and you actually begin to understand, slowly it filters through, that what they're basically saying is you're not necessarily seeing what's out there, neither are you not seeing what's out there. You're seeing what your mind perceives to be out there. You're hearing what your mind perceives to be the sound out there. You're smelling, so forth, tasting, touching. Something is triggered, it sends the message to the brain. The brain resorts the message and says, oh, that's a sparrow. Oh, that's a siren. And then you assume that that's what it is. And you assume that that is an actual object. But if you pick any object, what is this?
Lamp.
What breath. Part of it makes it a lamp?
A function.
Is function a noun or a verb?
Yes.
Verb. Yes. No.
I took that answer too.
So if you remove, say, this, does it still become a lamp? Is this part the lamp or is this the lamp?
The whole thing is the lamp. Functions together.
So is the verb, it's what it accomplishes that is called the lamp.
Yes.
How does it accomplish it? If the light bulb is burned out, is it still a lamp?
Yes.
Not really.
No, its function's gone.
Yeah, its function is gone. If there's a power failure, is there a lamp? It depends on all these circumstances to work together, doesn't it? So which part of it is the actual lamp? And yet it is a lamp, but it's not an identity, a fixed identity. It's not an intrinsic nature of lamp. It's a function of lamp, arising in time and dissolving in time. That's pretty straightforward, isn't it? So they say it's empty of an inherent, meaning fixed, identity. It's an empty of an inherent identity. It isn't that it doesn't exist. It isn't that it does exist. Total, complete, in terms of its own self-nature. It is that it is relative, in relation to. This is what I was talking about last night, isn't it?
Yeah.
Now, this is the whole concept in Buddhism of anatta, no inherent identity. The three signs of Buddha Dharma are anicca, impermanence, dukkha, dissatisfactoriness, and anatta, no inherent identity. This is the one that for Westerners is hardest to grasp. We don't have any problem with suffering, do we? Mm-hmm. We always like going shopping, don't we? Mm-hmm. Pot a problem with that. Impermanence, that's one of the best reasons to go shopping, so we don't have a problem with that either. Wouldn't you say? Or, you know, doesn't, how old are you now? How old were you 10 years ago? What do you even remember 10 years ago? I have to really sit down and get my calendar out and go, let me see, where was I? Was I really? Was that 10 years ago? Oh, my God. Perhaps you're not there yet. Give yourself another 10 years. I wish you the best. Or 20. Mm-hmm. Anicca, impermanence, mm-hmm. The continuous flow and change, whatever it is that is dependent on many causes and conditions coming together, is essentially going to find its way to flow apart. That's very straightforward, isn't it? It's called erosion, isn't it, in mm-hmm. geological circles? Mm-hmm. Dukkha, dissatisfactoriness. That whenever there is something that you like or identify with as a self and it doesn't happen, there's a sense of dissatisfaction, right? Which is from the point of view of anicca all the time. Because everything is always slightly disintegrating, isn't it? And there is the biggest dukkha, which I haven't even mentioned, but I will now, is that if there is a sense of an inherent self, something is always left out. If you're a pineapple, you can't be a strawberry. Mm. If you're a book, you can't be a plant. So, we are always imperfect. From a lot of the point of views that we project. And everyone else is always imperfect too. From a lot of the views we always project. Mm-hmm. Can you see that? And there's this dissatisfaction or worry about those we love or... Right? Wishing it was different and getting angry when it isn't. Is this true? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Anicca, dukkha, anatta. All three of those sufferings depend on reification of a self. If the consciousness were able to see the relative world both as verb, beautiful in its lampdom nature, how wonderful, and also as impermanent and flowing into who knows what, then you're accepting cause and effect. You're accepting the great teaching of interdependent origination. You know that one? We used to chant it every morning. Anicca, Vata, Sankara, Sankara. This is what Ananda Bodhi made us learn. We had to chant it every morning. At least we didn't have to chant it Burmese style. That was good. Mm-hmm. Anicca, Vata, Sankara. Dependent on ignorance arises dissatisfactoriness. Arises formation, actually. Ignoring this because you're not a plum, you can be a cherry. Ignoring this, you can become that. Mm. Because you're not a Kathy, you can become anything else, right? Whatever you choose, a bob or a body or whatever. Mm. And how is that choice made? How does a lamp come into being? Because there's a desire for light when the sun goes down. Motivation for motivation. So they say in Buddhism, karma or action is chetana or motive. Your actions depend on motive. The action of taking birth depends on the motive of rebirthing karma. If you've done enough meditation where you've had some experiences or in dreams or you've had some shocks in your life and then had them release, you might have had flashbacks of other deaths or other births. Some of you have undoubtedly had that experience. And it's not you that die. It's an aspect of the weave, the braid, the weave that went together to create this formation. There are propensities that weave together and form the next state of being called rebirth linking karma. It's a very complicated topic, so I'll stop for a little while. Do you have any questions, answers, comments, or complaints up to now?
When you said it could be many selves in one moment, in what sense?
Huh?
I think in just at the beginning you were talking, it could be many selves.
From one moment to another.
From one moment, okay.
But I mean a millisecond moment. I know I always put that beautiful globe on the windowsill and it's not there. I don't know who could have moved it. I know I always... Oh! I always put it on that table. Never done that?
Yeah.
Don't we all do it 1,000 times in mid-sentence, suddenly change course? But don't we then feel embarrassed or have to excuse it or have a reason? Well, it was because you lifted your lip or you... Or the wind blew from the north-northeast,
Or Jack did it.
Jack, well, he actually probably
could have. I was going to make it, Connor, order, it's my fault. Just quick comment. I don't have to do that anymore. It's wonderful. It's relief.
You've been married well for a long time. But we do. We have our... We have patterns of that, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
Which is another wonderful thing about meditating. It doesn't really matter what meditation you do. But you're actually training your mind to perform an inner function rather than an outer one. And in the process of that, all of your habits of dodging around in the outer will all arise. And there's nobody out there. And you can talk about, oh, how I can't do this meditation, or this isn't the right meditation. You can do that. You can blame it on there, or you can be damn interested. Gee, how come this comes up now? Well, maybe it's actually a propensity. Maybe this could be a rebirth linking karma. You never know when you're going to die. Do I want this to be the motive for the next? Do I want to pass this on to my real heirs?
Mm.
How much compassion do you have? Namjo Rinpoche used to say, never mind doing it now. Just think, when you get off that horse, who is going to get on? They really opened my eyes, you know? Especially because he was looking right into them when he said it. And what a good question.
Can you repeat it, please?
When you get off that horse, who is going to get on? The horse is the action, the motive, the motive that I'm riding.
Right, okay.
When the I ceases to exist, the cessary, this mental physical formation ceases to exist, the motive carries on. Who's going to get on? What is it going to, what kind of being is going to be created from that? What is the rebirth linking karma that in every moment is being reinforced? Is it my actual care for others? Is it my actual unconditional love that I actually do have buried there somewhere beneath the garbage, occasionally showing up? Then I bloody well better feed it. Huh? Then I bloody well better. I want to see the world a better place. Okay, start here. This garden.
Thanks, Susie.
It's true, isn't it? This garden. This is the one we have. This is the one we must love. Must love. You cannot change anything without love. If you try to change it by being arrogant and superior and right, you're just pushing it underground and it's going to have even more force for rebirth making karma. It doesn't work. You have to do it out of interest and love. And that's what the relative world is good for. You can get all of the insight you want into emptiness and will do you not one iota of good if you can't practice kindness in the relative. If you don't find every moment the opportunity for seeing everybody as if you'd never seen them before. What was that? The Buddha? Buddha, Buddha, Buddha. Yeah. Or as the Buddha said, all beings are the Buddha. All sounds are the divine sound. All places are nirvana. Imagine actually practicing that. So you started looking for that. I don't know how many of you get TED Talks on a weekly basis. I get them. So I have quite a few of them from the year I was in retreat, because you get 5 a week, and I have 52 weeks of 5 of them. One of these days I'll just take a month off just so I can tittle. TED, do you know TED Talks? Yeah. And, did you ever remember when I told you guys about the woman who wrote the book My Stroke of Genius?
Insight. My Stroke of Insight.
Mm-hmm.
My Stroke of Insight.
My Stroke of Insight, right. Did you ever hear about that? Well, I saw her on a TED Talk. And I emailed it to a bunch of people. I guess it just missed you. So, but does anybody still have that link?
Oh, I probably do.
It's still on the site.
Yeah.
Maybe if you could send it, to make sure that you have it. You'll love it.
Yeah.
But one TED Talk, and they had it, one of the ones that I got this week just before I left. Unfortunately, I only watched 3 of them, and then I realized I had to eat my dinner and go into a meditation class. Or I could have told you about all 5. Just as I was about to go off the site, I noticed they had the best of, the 10 best of, and it was a really short one, one of my superheroes, Viktor Frankl. Viktor Frankl is one of the beings that reading his book really affirmed something deep in me that I was beginning to doubt. Do you know Man's Search for Meaning? You ever seen that book?
Mm-hmm.
Viktor Frankl. Absolutely brilliant being. And he's giving, before he died, a live talk by Viktor Frankl. And apparently it was one of the bit. It was on YouTube, and Ted picked it as one of the best YouTube things in the last week's Ted. So I'm watching this, and he's talking about how you get the best performance out of employees or something. And so he says he's taking flying lessons. He's like probably in his 60s or 70s when he's giving this talk. He recently has started taking flying lessons. And his first thing, he's going to a destination right over there. And there's a wind blowing. So his instructor from here, he's going over there. His instructor says, okay, you fly toward that point, and then you fly again toward that point, and then you get there. And he like immediately had this understanding. That's how you work with people. You always assume they're higher up than you think they are.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens? They start to live up to the expectations because you're reflecting some part of their selves that hasn't been fed. And imagine doing that for yourself. Imagine doing that for yourself. Like not criticizing yourself. My God. Well, I mean, for half an hour, you could try it for that. Couldn't you? Couldn't you? Maybe? 20 minutes? Will you go for five? Fine. 5 minutes a day? Not criticize yourself. Wouldn't that be interesting? Just to see whether it made a difference in your life? Just because you got the right to. I was telling you last night, I tried to go 3 days without saying the word right. I didn't even manage a full day yet. I'm still going to try. I'm going to start again tomorrow. Why not? Why not make it an interesting exploration? Why not have the right to think highly of yourself? If it has that effect by someone else, imagine if you just decided to try it. Just praise yourself for 5 minutes every day. What would happen? Would you melt or something? Would you dissolve? Because I think the biggest problem we have in the West is self-criticism, don't you? And that's a lot of why we're not good at praising others. Because we're sort of secretive about ourselves. Because we don't really like ourselves all the time. Wouldn't you say? So what kind of rebirth-making karma would that produce? Maybe that would hit the mark. Maybe as simple as that. In Buddhism, they call that the practice of sila or morality. Cease to do evil. It's the basis. It's the basis for everything. It puts your feet on firm ground. Because when you start to love yourself, you start to appreciate what a pineapple does do, not what it doesn't. You don't keep comparing yourself to plums or tomatoes. I'm a pineapple and I'm okay. That was really bad. And this book is really excellent. It's called Introduction to Emptiness. So I actually have a copy. And somebody, not looking at anyone or mentioning any names, put one in my bowl. So this is Nagarjuna. Nagarjuna's teaching on emptiness, which Tsongkhapa was one of the people who was famous for translating it into the Tibetan. And I thought that maybe whoever could guess which number I'm holding in my mind from 1 to 20 can have this copy.
19.
What about a raffle?
You don't get to guess. Though.
Oh, no, I'm out. I should have shut up.
Sorry?
6.
7.
9.
19.
17 was it.
I know it was.
I put the blinders.
Oh,
hours.
Yeah. I knew it was.
But I was sure it was six. I
know. It'll get around. That's good.
And it's called Introduction to Emptiness, and it really does cover all these points. It also talks about the fear that will come up when one first gets a real glimpse that this is actually true, that what we think is out there is objectifying or reifying, and therefore so is the self a question. Mm. And that kind of fear state that comes up with that when you first get a real look at that. And then how do they start to turn around and question, well, but what is the relative world? What is a sip? And then there is an increase in the awareness and an increase in compassion. Because the relative world is all about compassion. You can't practice awareness in the relative world unless you're open to it, can you? Can you? If you're not open to the other, you can't practice awareness in it, can you? If you already know what you're talking to, there's no openness. Mm-hmm. You've already got it up here. There's not any interest. Isn't that true? Mm-hmm. So you're robbing yourself of the potential of this moment might be the one where you get a new understanding. Mm-hmm. That's really important. When we walk around inside of ourself, we're blinding. We're wearing blinders. When we walk around wondering who our self is and how we're seeing the world, we're exploring. Mm-hmm. Then every being is the Buddha, every sound is a divine sound, all places are nirvana. Because it's all possible. Emptiness is when we quit believing our subject-object things so absolutely, erotically, blindly. Self using the world to masturbate for self's pleasure. Isn't that crude of me to say it that way? But isn't that just truth? When we use the world to prove ourselves. I don't know about you, but and it's been a long time, but the orgasms I had where I cared equally for the partner and wanted to make it even higher were much better than ones where I was just after my own unconsciousness. How about you? None of you had orgasms?
Is that that twitchy thing?
They should know better. Walk right into them.
Yeah, gave him an opening.
I know, he jumped in. Questions, answers, comments, complaints? Yes, sir.
So it's always interesting when translating these concepts were like inherent. I'm going, okay, and then I'm going, fix. I'm going, okay, now I get it. And the translation from those concepts to like a different word, like maybe in those other cultures, it makes a great deal of immediate sense. But to me, it's having people like you explain it, then go over a couple of different words, inherent, and I'm fixed. Oh, okay. And it's like so helpful that just kind of the light bulb went on, right?
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Good.
So many times you do that and come up with different words, it's always helpful because then, you know, something fogged, but then a word will go, oh, okay, got it. Now I see. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Pleasure. Are you blinded by the light there?
Watching myself, trying to avoid it. I go,
Move your chair.
Well, turn that little way. I just leaned against the wall. Oops.
No questions for me?
Not yet.
It's not so much a question. It was a question I had last night and this morning, and that was, well, is this life inferior? I mean, if this life is worth living, is it here so we can learn something? We were talking about the collapse of the subject-object and the absolute and the particular coming together. And you answered that when you said that, more or less, that when you talked about the garden, and that more or less the purpose is that to learn to have interest and to have love. And that was the question I had last night, was, well, life is precious.
Very precious. And relative is very precious. And when you actually open to the relative, that is the path to experience the absolute. Mother Teresa. Isn't that what she did? Continuously open to the relative? Is that what her whole life was?
Mm-hmm.
Gandhi. People who had the courage and the love that was profound, that you could feel their energy. The Dalai Lama. Mm-hmm. We're so fortunate in this world. We could name so many people. Some of us had school teachers that had that influence, didn't we?
Mm-hmm.
That opened themselves
mm-hmm.
to who they had with them. And the difference they must have made in thousands of lives. Because for them, that was the only way to live.
Mm-hmm.
And how their wisdom grew with their compassion. Wisdom of non-selfishness, which is very like a no inherent self, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Mm.
Yeah. And there isn't a being. I was watching this fly crawl in my hand today, and I was sitting in the garden in the Mackenzie domain. Absolutely fascinating. Watching how his legs worked, wondering what his lifespan would be, and wishing it well. Colors, you know, that flash off their body, the sunlight. Their wings, how they... I moved one finger a little bit and he opened his wings and he closed them again and he opened them and just watching how they open their wings. How amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Compassion for everyone, not just people who are suffering. Actually thinking that all beings are the Buddha. That's something to wrap your mind around.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you mean it could be my bias? What a concept.
Say everyone's a historical figure.
Well, one of the things that we get locked up in is good and bad, though, don't we? Especially if we've been subject to suffering, the right and the wrong. What kind of discipline it must take to actually see somebody who is wrong and see what suffering must drive them to believe that. My daughter in Disbury at the moment, he is from Nigeria. Christian camp, education. Very intelligent man. Very interested in literature and arts and music. Found out I was a Buddhist. He must have been a child when he was saved from starvation by missionaries. Very intelligent and very emotionally embedded.
What do you mean by what just blocked you out? Is that what you're saying?
He just sort of went a little out of his usual very concerned, kept compassionate, and made a couple of statements about people who had different beliefs and didn't know what was going to happen to them when they died. In a bit of a loud tone. Then he caught himself. Since then, he's been trying to be interested in you. Which is pretty amazing, considering the fear that he must have been. That must have been drilled into him. You know, when missionaries get really right, how the fear is one of their main tools for not the love, but the fear. One of the main tools to get people to sign up, especially young people. So you look at, you know, what he had to deal with. How many people he must have seen die, you know, his families. Or you can be a righteous Buddhist if you want to. I don't think that's a good idea. I don't think that's Buddhist. And, you know, all of us meet those kinds of situations every moment, don't we, in our day? Sometimes in a marriage, sometimes at work, sometimes. We always meet those situations. And to take it as an actual time for practice, what a concept. That means we would have to do our own practice. We'd have to watch those voices coming up in us that are directed towards us in our practice. How did I lose where I was in the sadhana? You know? Why can't you do more than one practice? Of course you can. You have a huge mind. You have a big heart. Why isn't there room for that? Of course there is. Why not accept everything and see what you have time for? Some practices you can do when you're walking down the street, can't you? One foot on solid ground, one foot over the abyss. One foot on solid ground, one foot over the abyss. If you're willing. If you're willing. Then why not be willing? The option sucks. Really. Just like waiting between D and me. Not being open isn't a lot of fun. Because that completely magnificent monarch of a self requires a lot of service. Doesn't it? Just any little thing, and it could be, you know, hey, up! The scaffold!
Defense family goes up.
Yeah. Very fast. And guilt, personally, I really gave that up. I just couldn't do it. Okay, I can be wrong, but I don't have to be guilt with it. You know, how you punish yourself for. Boring. Well, how far was I? Did you have a question? Did you have a question? Did you have a question? Did you hear me? Did you have a question?
I heard you say that.
Okay, just checking. It was so beautiful what you said yesterday. You were talking about your hearing.
Oh, yeah, that.
That was so beautiful of you. Wasn't that kind of him? To just be so open in the group. That was beautiful. Dawn was telling me how much he appreciated it. It was very kind. Like letting the openness come, you know? It's like really a... It's neat, isn't it?
Doing something you don't know about. So.
Yeah, you become a more real person and there's a more softness in the relationship.
I wasn't here. Is there something that I could hear?
No. But come again, you'll probably hear more.
Okay, good, I will. Tomorrow morning. Maybe. If I'm here.
The cat started the same water twice.
Or once.
So are we done then for this evening? Is that, have you had manifestations?
Pretty full.
Well, I was thinking about the hearing and the idea of this divine sound, or that struck me of the that. So what we're hearing is it's our brain forms, makes it something. Mm-hmm. So in other words, we could all be just sort of sitting around and that could be the sound that's coming in, but that we structure it, make meaning to it.
Did you hear, were you here for that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. So there are two parts of the brain that work with hearing. One is tone and the other is sound. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I was going to say, I said, but I got it again. You know it's a question.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if I said it in Polish, which I can, you would think all the words were strung together. But because you're used to English, you listen to consonants.
Yeah.
Then the words aren't strung together. They're, you can see this individual words. And they all bring up an association in the brain. And then the brain tells you what I said.
Or what it thinks you said.
Based on all your information, what I said.
Yeah.
And it isn't that I didn't say that. The same with sight. Yeah. And it isn't that I did say that. It's that, you know, it's that there is a relative world. There is something that is said. Mm-hmm. But there isn't any fixity. It's a flow. It's like a river. Mm-hmm. It's like the sound of the wind, which is like, in this moment it's this, but then that sound, that part of the wind has moved on. So to make it into I think my best example of this is about, I've told you this before, so of course you will remember it. After 9/11, was 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks after 9/11, I believe, a reporter interviewed a group of, what was it, 40 people, something like that, I can't remember, a whole group of people, and asked them exactly where they were when they heard about it. And they all had very clear stories about where they were, and they knew exactly where they were and who was there and everything. 2.5 years later, 2.5 years later, he goes back to the same people and he asks them again. 20% of them had radically different stories. 40% of them had relatively different stories, and not one of them had exactly the same story. Don't you think that's interesting?
Mm-hmm.
Even what you say.
Mm-hmm.
2.5 weeks.
In terms of these concepts, in terms of tone, is it tone and sound? Isn't there also context that it's in that's going to...
Not what the ear picks up. That's
okay.
What the brain does.
Okay.
But you'll see it. You'll see the sight one, and then that'll make sense. Okay. And you'll get the hearing one to you later.
Thank you.
Yeah, I
didn't. Oh, you gave him one? Okay.
Oh, you need two?
You got both of them.
Oh, thanks.
You're one of the few... I'll touch him.
Yes. Some of the special ones.
So that puts a different light on it, doesn't
mm-hmm.
it?
Mm-hmm.
Who's listening, too, is important.
mm-hmm.
As well as who's saying.
Mm-hmm.
That it's relative. It's in relation.
Mm-hmm.
In relation to the circumstance, in relation to who's hearing.
Yeah.
In relation to who's speaking. So it isn't that it isn't that you're hearing it. It
mm-hmm.
isn't that it is.
Mm.
It's that it's relative.
Mm.
Therefore, you might as well think they're a Buddha.
Right. yeah.
You might as well... Victor Planck it. Victor Frankl it.
Hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I was just going to say, I know that my perceptions are not trustworthy. And I'm becoming more and more aware of that not anything specific, but I'll have a feeling about something, and I, negative or positive, and I know that they're always a little bit off kilter at the best of times, but sometimes they're wildly off kilter. But it just occurs to me that what you're saying is when you're aware that it's off kilter, why not just shoot for the best option?
Yeah.
You know, go, well, I don't know, let's go for the best outcome.
And why not?
And kind of take mm-hmm. that route regardless.
And why not?
Yeah.
Why not? It's your mind.
Yeah.
And which would you prefer to be true? Why not go that way? You know?
I've got a perfect example. There's someone I know who we were doing a project, and the supervisor got back to this person and said, well, I realize that what you're doing is better than spending money on something new. We were redoing something. ... Hopefully it will come in under $1,000, because that was the amount of money that... What this person heard was, I know it'll be better than buying something new, hopefully. I hope it'll come in under $1,000. So what she, or he, that person heard was a criticism of their abilities to do better than buying new.
Right.
What he meant was, Yeah, I know it's a great idea. Hopefully we'll be at the budget I need it to be. That's all. And I pointed that out to her because I've been working with this person for quite a while on this kind of an issue. And I said, do you realize that you mistook a dot, dot, dot for a comma? That's what you heard. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether they really heard me or not. But it's interesting how perception is...
I want to tell you one more thing. It doesn't really matter whether the other person hears you. What matters is that you can plant seeds.
Mm. Yeah.
It really doesn't matter whether I get the result. What matters is I can plant seeds. Mm.
Okay.
That's my whole purpose when I teach. Mm. I have no interest in somebody... getting it.
Going, oh yeah, you're right, you're right.
No,
yeah.
Not at all. I'm interested in planting seeds in ground that is ripe. Or maybe not quite yet ripe, but by the next rainfall it will be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like putting something in there that is going to spark them to a new understanding from their own being in their own life.
Yeah.
That's what's important. From my point of view, that's how I was taught. By wonderful teachers, kind, considerate teachers, putting new seeds in ground that wasn't quite ready yet. Or very acid, in all the meanings of that word for that time in the year. Like putting seeds in. And that's what's important. Trusting your own heading for the goal. You and yourself are a Buddha. Your sounds are a mantra. This is nirvana. What a different perspective, huh? Then you got nothing to prove. In a way, it's got everything to love. In a way. So that's all I wanted to talk about tonight. I hope that was...
Well, if that's all...
No, she's got it. The apple tree.
It's lovely.
So you notice this extremely beautiful gold light in your heart. It's absolutely gorgeous. God, you're gorgeous. And it just bubbles through your body, and down your armpits, and down your arms, and down your leg pits and down your legs, up your neck pit and up your head. I don't know, you figure it out. And it's everywhere, it goes out from your body in all directions, above, below, in front, behind, right, left, four quarters, it spreads out, fills this house. She just got a little hit and her abscess is feeling much better already in her little box, cat box downstairs. Just And then just like right through the whole house, and right through the whole town, and right through the whole world. You think whatever wholesomeness has been
gathered by our coming together,
we share it with all beings, so there is less suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings, so there is less suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings. So thank you for your great compassion. Thank you so much.
Thank you.